We continue to ponder John chapter 8. And as you can tell, if you're following it from day to day, it's not going very well. The tension is growing. The misunderstandings are getting worse. At the center of today's gospel and also today's first reading is the question of freedom. What is genuine freedom? What does it mean for us to be free? Before we get to that, though, let me just remind you of a little side point. This is really for those of you who are following the series of Pope Francis on St. Joseph. We're following that series of catecheses. We'll be up to our fifth one tomorrow. But in the third talk, Pope Francis mentioned this gospel passage. You might remember it. His topic in that third talk was about Joseph as a good husband, a just man and a good spouse. And then suddenly the Pope threw in this passage from John chapter 8, and he says, this is the most demonic passage in the whole Bible. You remember that? And when I was reflecting on it in our series, I said, the Pope is just being hyperbolic there. He's just exaggerating. This is not the most demonic passage in the whole Bible. But what the Pope was reacting to was this statement of the Jews in their opposition to Jesus. In this translation, it says, we were not born of fornication. We have one Father, God. So this line, this is, I think, verse 41 or 40 or 41. We were not born of fornication. The Pope's translation was, we are not sons of prostitution. And the way I think he was interpreting it was, they were saying, we're not children of immorality, but you are. And that way of attacking Jesus was a big insult against his mother. And the Pope was saying, don't attack mama. Don't attack mama. That's a demonic thing to do. And you know, this is a way people insult each other to this day. There's a very offensive curse word or expression in the Philippines that if you say that someone is the child of prostitution, it's very offensive. English too, that's a way of insulting. So it shows how bad the conflict has gotten between Jesus and his audience here. And the point in the Pope's talk, aside from don't insult mama, his point was Joseph, just so you remember this part of the series on Joseph, his point was Joseph in choosing to marry Mary took the whole reality. He made that decision with his eyes open, accepting whatever judgment would be made against her, accepting whatever consequences would come from accepting her child who wasn't his child. And the point of the Pope was Joseph did a very noble thing there in freely choosing to accept Mary into his home. It's actually a very good example of the kind of freedom that I think today's readings invite us to reflect on, freedom. So let's turn to this question of freedom. This is also a very good preparation for next week. Holy Week is a time to exercise our conscience or to more deeply follow a true conscience. And that means we have to use our freedom to make good decisions. In Holy Week, there's all kinds of examples of people making their decisions for or against Jesus. So these two readings are, you could say, a preparation for Holy Week, which is coming up so quickly. Freedom. Now, all of us think of freedom, as everyone does. The first thing we think of freedom is the capacity to choose between different alternatives. Everybody knows that's what it is. If you want to sit on this side of the chapel or that side of the chapel, you're free to choose. That's true. But it doesn't really get to the purpose of freedom or the deeper meaning of freedom, because we can use our freedom to choose good things or bad things. And to choose bad things is a misuse of freedom. So when, for example, when we get to next week, Judas, he can freely sell Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. He can freely make that decision. Or maybe he could sell him for 20 pieces. Maybe he could negotiate for 40 pieces. Well, he's free to do that. But that's a very evil use of freedom. Much closer to the most demonic passage in the Bible than this passage we read today. The woman who pours out the expensive perfume on Jesus' feet, she's free to do that. She can pour out the whole container, or half of it, or none of it. She can do what she wants. Right? But in giving the whole, she uses her freedom in a very beautiful way. So those two examples will come up next week. So there's more to freedom than simply having the capacity to choose. The question is, what are we supposed to choose, and do we make choices for what we're supposed as we're supposed to, or do we misuse our freedom? The irony being, when we misuse our freedom, we actually become less free. We become slaves. It doesn't seem like that when we make the choice, but that's exactly what happens. You see, Jesus says that anyone who sins or commits sin is a slave of sin. A very good description of what happens when we sin. When we sin, we think we are using our freedom, our free will, our capacity to choose, but we're using it to choose something beneath us or outside of our own dignity and certainly against the will of God. And the effect of that is to enslave us. It's quite a attractive error. I remember, just comes to my mind, this image of sin and the enslavement of sin that C.S. Lewis put in that book, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. If you remember that kind of fantasy story, the children enter into Narnia, which is this kind of other world. And one of the children, Edmund. Anyway, one of the children falls in with the wicked witch, the white witch, who dominates Narnia and keeps it winter all the time, but never Christmas. Anyway, the witch gives Edmund this Turkish delight. And Edmund is so, caught up, he's hooked. He's hooked on Turkish delight. And so the witch says, I'll give you some more Turkish delight if you bring your siblings here. So she's trying to ensnare them all. And she's using Edmund and his addiction to Turkish delight to betray his own siblings. And you see what it is. He's not dedicated to betraying his siblings. He's just dedicated to getting more Turkish delight. So he becomes a slave of that appetite, which makes him a slave of the wicked witch, which makes it possible for him to make some very evil decisions and to betray his own brother and his sisters. That's a fictional representation of the slavery of sin. But as I said before, it looks like when we sin or when we're being tempted to sin, it looks like we'll be free. Boy, a great example of this is the modern misunderstanding of marriage. Many people think that to marry is to lose your freedom. Because when you marry, you commit yourself to one person, and then you can't have anybody else. But if you're not married, well, you always leave your options open, so you're more free. That's what it looks like. But anybody who marries, if you marry with a genuine heart of love, you realize that when you marry, your capacity to love is greater. You can be a better spouse, better husband, better wife, better parent. You're giving yourself in a better way. You're actually freer to be who you are than you were if you were living with your partner before. Okay, well, that's another, that's a separate line of thought. But the idea is sin enslaves us. Therefore, truth frees us. And this is what Jesus says at the beginning. If you remain in my word, you will truly be my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. It's a very profound statement. It's not just a philosophical principle, although it is that, but it's a very profound statement about a whole way of life. When we remain in the Word of God, inspired Word, which is what we're pondering right here, and we will truly be His disciples, following Him, bound to Him, you could even say a slave of Him. That's what a disciple is. No, he's committed, he or she is committed to the Master. And you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Those who are most deeply committed to the Word, most fully committed as disciples, are those who are the most free, because they know the truth, and the truth is what frees us. The Jews say, we are descendants of Abraham, and we have never been enslaved to anyone. How can you say you will become free? It's a little bit of humor there, because everybody knows, including these Jews in the audience, everybody knows that the Jews were enslaved in Egypt. It's part of their very identity. They were enslaved for hundreds of years. So for them to say, we have never been enslaved by anyone, is a very blatant misrepresentation of one of the central points of Jewish history. They were enslaved in Egypt, and they were set free. God chose Moses, sent Moses to the Pharaoh, let my people go, and they were set free from slavery and crossed the Red Sea, went into the desert on the way to the Promised Land. That's so basic that everybody knows it. But here they're protesting, we have never been enslaved to anyone. Now, what this does is it makes it possible for Jesus to speak about different kinds of slavery. There's the kind of slavery that they had in Egypt, the kind of slavery that we know of as the grave violation of human rights, of treating people or being treated as property, what's now called human trafficking. That is a certain a deep violation of human freedom. But Jesus isn't talking only about that kind of slavery. In fact, he's not even talking primarily about that. That's why he shifts it. There, he's saying the truth will set you free. It doesn't mean the truth is going to get you out of a human trafficking situation, because that's a physical bond. The truth sets us free from sin. And so he explains, well, whoever commits sin is a slave of sin. There's different kinds of slavery. You know, you could be enslaved by a cruel master who puts you in chains, or you can be enslaved by condemnation. Remember the woman caught in adultery in Sunday's gospel. She wasn't a slave, but she was bound by the accusation that she was guilty of adultery. Well, then we have the woman in Monday's first reading, Susanna, who was not guilty of adultery, but she was enslaved by the accusation against her. Then you can think of people who are enslaved by their own vices. Just talk to your grandson, try to tell him to stop playing video games. See if he can stop. He's not a slave. No one's chaining him to his gadget, but once he finishes one game, he's compelled to play another one. Or people watching their TikTok videos. Well, once they watch one or two or three, they can't stop. They get caught. And you could even say enslaved by it. Or any addiction is like this. When a person is caught in gambling, no one is forcing them to place another bet. No, there's no chain. But there's an emotional or psychological chain. They can't pull themselves away from the betting table or the slot machine or whatever it is. So I'm just saying there's different kinds of slavery aside from simply being chained. And what Jesus is talking about is the worst kind of slavery of all, which is sin. Because sin is the slavery that we choose for ourselves to get caught in a weakness or to be forced into a bind. We don't choose that, or not with full freedom. But with sin, especially grave sin, with full freedom, with full responsibility, we choose something evil, and that binds us. Today's first reading is the moving story of the three young men who are put on the spot to defy their faith. The king, the most powerful man in the world, tells them, worship this God, worship this idol. And they say no. He says, if you don't do it, I'm going to throw you into a white hot furnace. You're going to burn up in a second. In other words, he's forcing them. That's external force. And they say, no, we won't do it. It doesn't, that's freedom. They could say yes, oh yes, we'll do it. They have that kind of freedom, right? They could have exercised their freedom to say, okay, we'll worship any idol you want. But in doing that, they would have made themselves not only the slave of that king, but the slave of sin. Instead, they stand up and they say, forget it, king. We're going to do what's right. We're going to serve our God. Whether he saves us from the furnace or not isn't even the issue. Because that's external. That's an external bond. Interiorly, we belong to him. So they choose the truth. And that choice makes them free. As it turns out in this story, God saves them from the external punishment. They're thrown in the prison, but they don't get burned up. And the king realizes, oh, these men who defied the law, who defied the king, disobeyed the royal command, they made the right choice. They chose true freedom over external freedom, physical freedom. Okay, this is just something for us to keep in mind as we go forward in Lent. All of our moral decisions are opportunities for us to choose to be disciples of Jesus or not, to freely choose to be disciples or not, to follow the truth. And when we do that, the truth sets us free.